meeting is called to order. It is about 6 minutes after 3:00 on March 30th, 2004. Members present are Representative Wolf, Representative Coghill, and Representative Seaton, and myself, Wilson. And thank you, everyone, for attending. We are going to hear several bills today. House Bill 338, Entry to School, Senate Bill 288, Temporary Child Custody Hearings and Placement, Senate Bill 269, Parent Access to Child's Library Records, and Senate Concurrent Resolution 19, Supporting Fish Education. So we've got a lot to do. We actually, House Bill 239, ID System for Prescription, was on the agenda. That is being moved to Thursday's meeting. Everything was pulled together for sponsors, so they requested us to do it till next Thursday. So if there's anybody online that is interested in that bill, we are going to be hearing it next Thursday instead. So first of all, House Bill 338, Entry into School, by Representative McGuire and Ryan McKinster. Staff of Representative McGuire is here. This is the bill that we heard at the last meeting, and so Ryan is here just to answer any questions. We heard the bill, and is there anyone online to speak to the bill? Any questions from committee members? Do we need a review of the bill at all or anything like that? Representative Coghill.
Questions or comments?
Questions or comments?
Chair, I'm not going to object to the bill moving, but I'm just going to object to the bill, and probably the reason why is I don't know that it needs to be done. So I think the delegated authority to the administrator could be done by the local district anyway. I think the sliding scale between September 1 and August 15th is not that big a deal, but I just don't think it needs to be done, but I'm not going to hold it in committee by voting against it.
Well, I actually think that there's probably a couple districts that it's very meaningful in, and probably those districts are military districts where there's a military base where people come in. They're transferred in, and their kids are expecting to start school. When they get here, they can't. And it's really hard for the school, I think, in times like that to make adjustments because there's always somebody out there that wants that adjustment to be made. And so I think that's where it's coming from.
And I agree, Madam Chair. I have Eielson Air Force Base on one side of me and Fort Wainwright on the other side of me, and I've been representative for Fort Wainwright. The August 15th actually is more significant or helpful to them, but in many cases. But unless there's other discussion, I'm ready to move it.
Okay, let the record show that Representative Cisna has joined us. Representative Wolf.
Yeah, my only comment about the bill is, you know, it does kind of, if you're coming from an area that, you know, doesn't work for September 1, is this going to come back and we're going to amend it again for September 15th and then again on the 30th, October 15th? A rolling date.
I actually asked Eddie Jeans to come talk to me about that very issue. As I understand it, the school district starts July 1, ends June 30, and it's up to the district to make the decisions on what dates that is. So this is definitely direction, but they've already gotten a lot of latitude. So this gives direction, there's no doubt, and especially with regard to granting some authority to the chief administrator. So,
and Madam Chair, Representative Coghill.
Identify yourself.
Representative Ryan McKinster from A to Representative McGuire. Representative Coghill through the chair. We actually spoke with the Juneau School District, Anchorage School District, and Fairbanks School District. And we originally talked about setting that date, the early entry date, to whatever the first day of school was. They had actually started school, but they actually thought it was a better idea to have a concrete date to go by. So it was under the recommendation that we actually set the concrete date at September 1st rather than have a a moving date depending on the first day of school.
Do I hear a motion?
Madam Chairman, I move that we move out of committee CS for House Bill 338 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Is there an attached fiscal note?
Any objections? Hearing no objections, so moved. And so this bill has, make sure everyone signs the, thank you, Ryan. And then we will go to CS for Senate Bill 288, Judiciary Version V, Temporary Child Custody Hearings and Placement. And this bill, come on forward, Joanne Gibbons. Oh, no, wait a minute. That's Jacqueline Tupou. Jacqueline, come forward, I'm sorry. And then Joanne Gibbons, Program Administrator for the Office of Children's Services, is here to testify if needed. So, Senator Green.
Good morning. Or afternoon. Thank you.
We'll take it.
I know. My name is Lida Green. I'm a senator from Senate District G, which is the core area of the Mat-Su borough. And the actual part of this that has the greatest importance is the fact that we're just defining the language that a judge must use at a hearing when a child is being assessed and being determined as a child in need of aid. And this says you must use the phrase contrary to the welfare of the child. This has nothing to do with the process. It has nothing to do with anything anyone goes through in making that determination. It only refers to the language the judge must use at the time the decision is made. This has great implications for the lifetime of that child in custody, because without this language, federal funding will be denied until the child ages out of the system. It could be hundreds of thousands of dollars over a child's lifetime. Maybe as little as 50, it could be several. It could be a substantial amount of money for that child over its lifetime that it's in the custody of the state. This language must be in statute in order for us to recapture and to capture that money properly. This will just be an instruction to the court that the phrase, contrary to the welfare of the child, must be used at the time.
Is this something new?
I think it's, I don't know that it's new, but it's,
through the chair. This is for the record, my name is Jacqueline Tupou. These are things that are already occurring. There's already state laws in place that dictate this process. Like Senator Green said, all we are doing is conforming the language that the judge must use to be in compliance with federal requirements. And like Senator Green said, there's an immense amount of money that will be captured and recaptured by making sure that our language is in alignment with federal law. And it's estimated that we will receive about $500,000 in federal 4E funds in FY05 with the passage of this legislation.
Do I have any questions from the committee members? Have anyone that online that wants to testify or anything? Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I understand what you're doing. I guess the last sentence is what bothers me and on the sponsor statement. And I understand, you know, as a parent, and I'm kind of sensitive to this, and I think we have a lot of people in this room are sensitive to this. And it's just, I'm speaking as a parent at this point. Be very, very careful about putting money on, you know, we can get this money for our kids. That's the only thing that concerns me. But I don't have any problems with the bill.
I do want to restate, if I may, Madam Chairman, that nothing about the process changes the information that the child and the agency must go through. Not one thing is changing. We're not establishing anything. We're not changing anything. It's just this language.
as you a parent, you know, we understand that. And I think a lot of people get scared.
Representative Sisson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I guess I identify with the colleague, Representative Wolf, on that point that what I know is that we do not do everything we could do to provide services to families, because there are things that, that we haven't gotten in place, and I haven't gotten the buy-in from the department to put those pieces in place to really get services to parents that many times have slipped through the cracks that could be helped. And that if, in fact, we put the resources there at that moment when, in fact, the judge is ready to make a proclamation, other states have found that that's the teachable moment, and that that's when, in fact, you can get you can get families to do the huge stretch that they have to do to change their lives to make it a safe place. and it is it's in hard budget times when we keep cutting our budgets. And we keep cutting our budgets right sometimes to the services that really affect these kids. It's scary. This is scary.
Any other questions? Do I hear a motion? Representative Wolf?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll make a motion to move Senate Bill, 288. Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I want to make sure that that is CS for Senate Bill number 288, Judiciary Version V. I just want to make sure that we
get
that all in there.
For Senate Bill 288, Judiciary.
Version V?
Version V. Or B. V is in Victor.
I think I'm going to just object.
Okay. We have an objection. Representative Sissons, would you like to?
Because I think, I think that I would feel more comfortable if we pass this this legislation with more buy-in by the department. And I'd like to hear more commitment on the part of the department to make sure kids stay in home and get back to home. Is that a possibility?
Well, let's have the department. Joanne, can you come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joanne Gibbons, and I'm the program administrator for the Office of Children's Services.
And I think Representative Sisson has some questions for you.
Not bad. And I might, the huge question is that we are trying to, as much as we possibly can right now, make sure that we're getting as many federal funds as we can. We're shifting from general fund. From the state actually financing a lot of the things that we have had them finance, and we're moving more and more to federal funds. And we know in doing that that there is a certain amount of risk in doing that, because federal government disallows a lot of the receipts that we send to them, or the billings that we send to them through Medicaid. And that we're through this legislation, which I know is being offered in one of the best possible ways, but at the very same time, my real fear is that for literally years now, this is my sixth year talking about trying to get intensive family services in place at that moment where the judge is claiming that this is not a safe home, that's a moment where many families can actually be helped to make it a safe home. And that we don't put our money into the foster care system. We keep whittling away at that and the training for that. And that's where these kids will go, right here. They'll be taken away from home, correct?
Chair, it would depend on the judges. If the judge, or if the judge rules that based on the evidence he had beforehand, that it's contrary to the welfare of the child to be in the home, then that child would be placed out of the home.
He will do that. And with that, there's not to think that the state would use that as an incentive, but or that that would be an incentive, but it is. I mean, it is money. And the system is not right now. It's overwhelmed, continues to be overwhelmed from everything I can see. We're not helping families keep their kids before this moment, or we wouldn't have so many kids in the system. And we're not putting the money into the foster care system where the kids go. Services aren't, that's not where we're putting our money. This budget cycle we have, unless somebody can remind me that there's some money that was put in that I didn't know about that brought us up to speed on this, I'd want some other kinds of commitments from the department first.
I would like to make a comment here. First of all, because there's been such a change in the whole system, and there, I feel that we can come back next year and make maybe more of those demands because it will have them given us the time to get some things in place. There's a lot of upheaval going on right now, and we are trying to make a lot of changes like one-stop shopping and things like this. And so I think maybe it would be more appropriate to look at this after the dust has settled and things are kind of in place so we really know what's going on. I don't think we have a handle as easy this year as we might by next year. But I understand where you're coming from for the funding. And I think that maybe we could possibly send a note, or even you, or I would be glad to. When it goes to finance, I think that would be more appropriate for them to take any kind of steps like this at the finance committee and not in this committee. Representative C.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm just trying to get straight. That you're posing, is it that making this determined at this time and with having access to federal funds, are you feeling that it would tend to have the judge pull more kids from their families? Is that what the...
I don't know that the incentive would be for the judge. I think the incentive would be on the part of the state because, I mean, took an economic course last year, and the word that was the phrase that was mentioned over and over again is incentives matter. Incentives matter. And if it works better for the state to have, I mean, the better, the more it's sweetened by having the money come with the children. We have how much money that comes, receipts in the fiscal year of next year of 500,000, right? Or 500,000. Yeah, that sort of thing is an incentive to not try to figure out how, no matter what, we make sure that every single family that there is that can be helped, will be helped. And if this was me just saying that with no history of this point in time having been met in other states and there being services in place, but we've known for the last 6 years that there's more than 30 states that are using this very technique to come in at this particular time and to put services in place, and it's an amazing percentage of successes when it's done, right at this point when the judge is making his determination. And I guess I'm just saying, and Madam Chair, I
Representative Sisna, it might be a good idea for you to
put a bill and introduce a bill to get something like this done.
I have, every single year.
I don't want to pursue this anymore.
Every single year.
Right now. So thank you very much.
Can I tell you why I'm doing it?
Not right now.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
And I would like to ask you, Joanna, can you respond shortly to what she just said, and then we'll go on.
Madam Chair and committee members, a couple of things. First of all, what this bill does is it does require that the judge make a certain ruling at the very first hearing that concerns the placement of a child. Part of the reasons this is a federal requirement for FORE funding is because the federal government wants to ensure that a parent's rights and a child's rights are protected. Otherwise, if the judge does not make that ruling in the first hearing that it's not contrary to the, you know, that it's not contrary to the welfare of the child, then the child should return home. And so the federal government is very clear in that they want to make sure that the judge has made that ruling before they will provide any funds for the care of that child while that child is in the home. That's one point I would like to make. And the other point I would like to make is certainly, Madam Chair, as you mentioned, the Office of Children's Services is undergoing a tremendous amount of change at the present time. Keeping children in their own home and preventing removal is one of the major areas of our program improvement plan. And so that's why we have instituted programs like the New Family to Family project that's going to be starting in Anchorage. Our number one priority is, yes, to keep kids safe, and also, though, to families together, if at all possible. And I can certainly feel comfortable making that commitment on behalf of the Office of Children's Services, that is our number one priority.
And I hope that next year, whoever is HES chairman, that comes out and you let us know where you're at and whether you feel that we've made progress in this area and whether this has made a difference, because hopefully there will be more funding coming in by then that maybe we could connect or do something with. So, you know, I don't want to, I think the connection is good. And I'm going to be interested to see how much more we get because of this, and maybe we can channel it. So thank you. Does anybody else have any other questions? Do I hear a motion?
We already got a motion. She's objected.
Oh, that's right. Is your objection still there?
Okay, would you please read the roll call, please?
Yes.
Representative Wolf?
Yes.
Representative Cogdill?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Sisler?
No.
Representative Capstan? Representative Gatto?
Yes.
And Chair Wilson?
Yes. 5-1. Okay, with that, the bill has passed, and make sure everyone signs the whatever you call it. Signs. The book.
Signs.
So, anyway, thank you very much, and that bill has passed out of committee then. And our next bill is also Representative Green's bill. This bill probably is a little more controversial. Oh, Senator Green, sorry. I am so sorry. So this is Senate Bill 269, CRA version Q, and this bill clarifies that parents do have the right to access their children record at public libraries as well as at public school libraries. And so, Senator Green, I'm so sorry, would you kind of go into and explain your bill to us?
Yeah, my name is Lyra Green. I am a senator from District 3, the area of the Massachusetts borough. And Senate Bill 269 was introduced after some conversations I had with folks in our district who had received telephone calls from their local library concerning their children. One was to say that a book had arrived that their child had on order, and the parent asked for the name of the book and was told
that they couldn't share the name of the book with them because it was confidential information. And nor could the parent pick up the book without the child present. The other was a telephone message left on the answering machine that said your child owes money for fines for overdue books. So they kind of coincidentally came to me about the same time during the summer. So I thought, well, someone's misinterpreted what law is. So we began the quest to find out how that could be the interpretation, because I thought it was a little past the common sense side of it. And and in current law, it allows parents to access children's library records at public school libraries, but does not include public libraries in that language. Therefore, there's the assumption that it would not include a public library and for that same age child. In federal law, there is also statute of an act, the FERPA, the Federal Education Regulatory Privacy Act, or whatever, and it requires that parents do have the right to access all educational records of their children in a public school. So this bill actually brings our state statute into confirmation with FERPA by setting an age, because FERPA requires it to be 18, under 18, being held under 18. And we have drawn this legislation, I've passed it to, from this, the other side, to have public library standards for to school libraries. And it's been an interesting experience to have this, because I would probably be the first person to want to ever discourage anyone from reading or the privacy of reading. That is not my concern at all. My concern is the total lack of convenience and the issue of a parent's right to access. Some would say, well, by coming into the library and use the library computer, you can use a child's library card and access that information via the internet. And, however, they can't give you the information face to face or the phone contact to find out the information about what book is overdue, what that base information is. And so that's been my concern, and I just found it a very disagreeable issue that a public library could have more information about my child's records than I'm entitled to through that same process. And, we've received a lot of comments on it. We've received a lot of letters positively supporting this. And it would be our desire to keep this as simple as possible and to not create a more difficult process for public libraries, but that process, because we've, and in fact someone testified that always when they would, as employees of a public library, would be asked, they said, well, of course, gave out the information. It seemed the common sense thing to do, but in retrospect, I guess I broke the law. And I don't want that either. But this is just to simplify and to make that information that a child has on record at a library public information. And certainly there's a reason for the privacy statutes concerning the release of information about the books people check out. because you certainly wouldn't want a mailing list created off of library patrons or a list published of books everyone's checking out and the names of those people. And that's what I think library protection statutes were created to do. And so with that, if there's questions, I'm happy to. If there's anything I've overlooked, I'm sure Jacqueline will nudge me and
I'm going to deviate just a little from my normal procedure this time because I have two people that are on time constraints. And so, first of all, I would like the Commissioner Mark Antrim. Mark, are you here? Yes. Would you please come forward? He has to go to another meeting, and so if you will just give us your testimony, and we'll let you be on the call.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Antrim. I'm the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Corrections. Normally, I'm meeting with you and testifying with you in that capacity. Today, I'm appearing before you as the father of Molly, a voracious reader who's currently age 18. This bill has got special significance to me, and I would urge that the committee pass it. This bill will address parental concerns on a broad spectrum. On the one hand, I think it addresses the concern of parental control, if you will. You know, we seem to be okay with the fact that the parents have the right to be concerned about the types of books, material, well, not books out of movies and television shows that parents that our kids watch, in terms of violent content, sexual content, that kind of thing. And then when it comes to books, we get a little bit nervous about limiting what our kids can read. I think this bill will address that and give those rights back to those parents, to parents with those concerns. Secondly, though, I think this kind of middle of the road. This bill will address a very interesting situation in libraries where parents are financially liable for books that their kids take out, and yet they can't know what those books are. It's almost a ridiculous situation if you really give it any thought. At the other end of the spectrum, well, this is where I fall into. I wanted my daughter to read everything that she could. The way that she would do this, at a very early age, she was issued a library card from the general library here, and she would use our home computer, reserve a book, and then I would get a call or she would get a call that the book was in, and I'd go pick it up. That system worked great for a number of years. And then I was advised one time when I went down to pick up the book that I had to have her with me or something. And they wouldn't let me have the book. So I got into a pretty heated discussion with the front desk person, during which at a certain point I realized really it was a matter of policy and, there was no point in arguing with her about it. So I called the librarian at a later date and we discussed it. And bottom line was I think we actually got to a point where we made a modification and they put a note on the screen for a while. So that seemed to work. Yeah, actually, that's where it was. So I was able to pick it up for a short while after that by having the person at the front counter check this note. But even after, at a certain point, that even stopped. So bottom line is, from about age 13 on, my daughter could just quit using the local library. And we've been making extensive use of Amazon.com, where she buys, used books. And I've got to tell you, I just think that's wrong. Okay, my intent, I guess this is kind of an unintended consequence of the policy that stands right now. I mean, the librarians want kids to read, but this current situation has got a real chilling effect on that. And And Juneau's a pretty good example. I mean, we've got a library that's located away from a lot of neighborhoods, and so it's very convenient for parents to zip through there on their way home from work and pick the books up. But we have a policy in place that just doesn't work real well. Apparently, there are some ways to get around it, but for us, it just didn't seem like it was working. And I just, it was ridiculous for me to bring her library card down. I'm a parent. I mean, what? If I were a card, I could have stolen the card, for Pete's sake. At any rate, I thank you for your time. I would urge your support of the bill. I think this will address a lot of problems for a lot of parents and really kind of put some sense back into our library system. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Any questions? Representative Gatto.
Thanks. I always had this thought, if library books were private for the students, maybe grades ought to be private for the students. I mean, certainly the kids would vote in that direction. So the whole idea of what privacy rights that children have did seem to have well past the bounds of reasonableness.
For the chair, to Representative Gatto, you know, this is kind of how ridiculous it is. I mean, we actually did lose, you know, well, my daughter lost a book, and so they freely told me at that point what book was lost so I could try to locate it in our house. We've got books from one end of our house to the other. And I said, well, what's the title of the book? It came out right over the phone. So I'm not, at a certain point, I guess the privacy issue becomes less of a concern as opposed to a property issue. So I'm not, it's just kind of a, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you very much.
And now I'd like to go online. Mayor Diane Keller of Wasilla, I realize you are in another meeting too, and so you would like to be heard next, so we're glad to have you.
If you're there.
If you're there, Diane.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. I was having a little bit of a hard time hearing. Somebody just said by the speaker to rattle the paper. It's kind of difficult if you're online to hear.
Don't blame me. It was more paper.
The reason that I spoke to Senator Green about this is I believe she told you about my son who was six at the time, had his own library card. And we would go over to the library and I would allow him to check out books. And the reason why I wanted him to do that is to teach him about responsibility. However, as Senator Green told you, there came a time when if we were going to the library and I was calling to see what books he had checked out so we could return them, and they told me they could not provide that information to me. So needless to say, we searched his room for any books that we could identify at the library, but we had took those back. However, we did not get all of them. And then the library sent me a bill for the books that my son had checked out, and they listed every title that they would not tell me on the phone prior to them being overdue. So I have a bit of a problem with that and the fact that if they can't tell me over the phone before they're overdue, why would they then hold me responsible after they're overdue for the late payment? Which there's no way my 8-year-old son would ever be responsible for a late payment. I just think that is completely absurd. And I have had other people, Matsubura residents, because 80% of the residents that use the Wasilla City Library are Matsubura residents, and I have had other parents complain to me about this particular issue, and I have encouraged them to contact their representative in Juneau because it is a state issue. It's not a local issue that I can do anything about. So, and I also think that if they still stay the same, and if there were kids that wanted to check out particular material that maybe their parents didn't want them to see, they're going to find a way to do that. And so I don't know that this is really doing, I don't even know, I can't imagine what the intent of this bill when it was written was, but I don't think that the bill is serving the purpose that it was intended to serve.
Diane, so are you for the bill or against the bill?
I am for the bill that would allow parents to know the information of their children, if their children are checking out.
I think Senator Green has a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Diane, did you mean the current statute versus the bill when you said it didn't do what it was meant to do?
Well, you guys have the thing that you're proposing is a fix that will allow parents to know that information, correct?
That's correct.
And that's what I would support.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot, Diane.
Uh-huh.
What I'd like to do is we have several people online, so let's hear testimony and then we will go on. So let's go off net first. Andre McLeland?
McLeod.
It's Andre McLeod.
Okay, thank you. Please give us your name and affiliation, please.
Yes, my name is Andre McLeod. I live in Anchorage and I'm a parent of a 21-year-old. Even at 21, he still doesn't have a right to privacy as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I'm in favor of SB 9, Hope is Becomes Law, and thank Senator Green for taking the time to address what is seemingly a petty annoyance, but in all actuality points to an acrimonious public policy that is adversarial to parents and guardians of children under 18. I'm also totally appalled at what necessitated such a bill to be introduced. What kind of system do we have where public employees and public libraries, state form with public funds, would be permitted to withhold information from parents about their minor children? Why are parents not given information that is rightfully theirs about their children? It's evident that a much deeper problem exists wherein librarians are allowed to do as they will without censure. The legislature is constantly passing bills making parents more and more responsible for their children's behaviors. Public policy providing incentives for better parenting are becoming more exact and more detailed. In turn, parents have moral obligations to raise their children well. Alongside those obligations are parental rights, including having any and all information pertaining to their children in order to mitigate their children's behavior should it be less than good. Having access to their children's public library records in order to have all the information is a no-brainer. Parents are legally and completely responsible for their children until they reach 18, the age of majority. At the very least, parents do not need any publicly funded librarian encroaching on their inherent and absolute parental rights. Please pass SB 269 and protect those parental rights which take in a set of obligations, responsibilities, and liabilities that parents hold. Librarians violating those rights by not releasing children's public library records to parents should be reproached and held accountable for dangerously shattering the increasingly fragile trust between families and our publicly funded employees and institutions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Andrea. Could you do you have that written down?
Somewhat, yes.
Well, could you send that to us so we could add it to the record?
Sure.
Thank you. Arthur Weeks. Arthur Weeks, are you on off net?
I believe I'm online right now. Am I not?
You are. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you for accepting my testimony today. My name is Arthur Weeks. I'm the director of Anchorage Municipal Library, and I would like to put in the opposing viewpoint on this bill. I've been a librarian for the past 28 years, and I'm also a father of two children, one who's now grown. And for the past 28 years, I've been vigilant in protecting the rights and privacy and confidentiality of people who make reading a matter of personal inquiry and want to take themselves on a self-directed, independent educational path, free from oversight from the state or from a parent who may be who may have the child in a situation where the child is looking for reading material that may help them through a difficult situation, parental abuse, alcoholism. There are a lot of instances where children may want to investigate on their own conditions in which they may not want parental oversight. Now, I think we have to look at why we're looking at this bill. There was a parent who wanted the library to reveal what their child was reading. And of course, it begs the question, why didn't the parent simply ask the child? And it's through open communication that I think that we should be encouraging that would make this bill not necessary. I want to make clear that a submission of a public library, and it is different from a school library. A school acts in loco parentis, but a public library does not have that responsibility or does it place on the reader the idea that there may be that there's going to be disclosure of what their inquiries are all about. The mission of the public library is to provide information and inspiration where people can grow and develop through self-directed, independent educational process. This bill undermines that mission. So as I say that in the early years, and I understand, I've listened to the testimony in support of this bill. I can understand why parents want to have the assistance of child. The child probably should be at the library by himself at a young age anyway. However, when the child is old enough to start going into the community on their own, as they get into the teen years, as they're looking at self-exploration, self-discovery, where they may have to ask information from a guidance counselor, the guidance counselor may want them to go further into their inquiries about their, perhaps their sexuality, perhaps the difficult situation at home, perhaps the difficult situation they're having in their socialization process, that process be held sacred and confidential, as it would be with a healthcare provider like a psychologist or the like. So I am really feel strongly that while this legislation does appear to have a common sense element to it, it strikes me that when we rush to judgment here, we may be putting ourselves in the same situation that we did 3 years ago when the Patriot Act was passed in a rush, and it kind of gave us a morning after hangover with the unintended consequences that precipitated from that, and when we realized what civil liberties we were giving up. I urge that we urge that we look at the parental responsibility of being open communication and not putting in a situation where the state intervenes in that process.
Thank you, Arthur. Representative Gatto has a question for you.
So, Arthur, you're familiar with the book, It's Only Natural?
I'm not familiar with that particular book, and I feel embarrassed. I probably should be. Review it for me.
I think you should be. It's a book that's very controversial in the district, and it's been asked to be removed from certain libraries. It treats sexuality very factually, full of photographs. And it's certainly was available to children even in the elementary school. And I guess my question deals with, if you just a elementary school student had checked out this book, wouldn't that be something that you would want to know, that your child was getting very interested in sexual themes and was now checking out books that showed how to do it and some of the excitement of doing it? Wouldn't that be a concern as a parent to you?
Well, first of all, I'm from the school. If the child is old enough to ask, they're old enough to get a responsible answer. And as a matter of fact, one of my children, who's now 11 years old, was asking me very pointed questions about sexuality not too long ago, and I answered them as frankly as I felt that that would be age appropriate. I have no trouble. My dealing is with the open communication I have with this child. I don't think he would be ready for this book. I would tell him that this book might be something he would look at in a few years from now, and I would find a book for him that would be more appropriate. But once again, sir, my dealing is when the child is old enough to ask, they're old enough to get a responsible answer.
Representative Wolf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You made a statement back just a second ago that your child asked you the question. Wouldn't you prefer that your child ask you the question instead of go to the library and look in a book and ask the librarian for permission to look at the book? Some stranger? Isn't the parent's responsibility? That's a parent-child thing. And I'd...
One thing I've noticed from my child is that he chooses his reading matter at the level to which he can understand what he is reading and viewing. And there's a lot of things that I think that get too explicit that really wouldn't be something that he would find it within his world of understanding. And I'm not particularly worried that cause harm to the child.
Thank you, Arthur. I'm going to go to Wrangell, to Kay J. Bush. Kay, are you on?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
How are you today?
Good. Good afternoon. My name is Kay J. Bush. I was born and raised in Wrangell, and I've been the public librarian here for 22 years.
concern is that the library staff has no way to determine which parent or guardian may have the legal right to request information about the child's library records. And I believe that any section of the library will find this a difficult aspect to deal with. The public library staff does not operate under the same condition as the school library, where they have access to this type of information. Also, I believe staff members may easily find themselves liable under the proposed law. The borrowing record of the child needs to be between the parent and the child and should not put the library staff or the child in the middle. Our library has a positive image, especially in regards to meeting community needs and confidentiality for all patrons. In the 22 years that I've been a librarian, I cannot recall one instance where the library staff was not able to work with the parent and child regarding the books that were borrowed from the library. I believe that our existing rules work, and unnecessarily including public library records in the same disclosure category as school libraries will jeopardize the trust of our patrons that our library has built up over the years. And I appreciate thank you for this opportunity to express these opinions.
Thank you, Kay. Does anyone on the committee have a question? Thanks a lot, Kay.
Thank you.
Going to Ketchikan, Judith Anglin.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. My name is Judith Anglin, and I'm the library director of the Ketchikan Public Library. We've been operating under these existing laws for a long time, and there are parents who come into the library who request information about what their child has checked out, and the first time that they hear about this situation, it does give them pause, and parents have to think about it and say, oh, I guess I do need to have my child's library card number, or I need to have a note put on, I need to ask my child to put a note on their record saying that it's all right for the library staff to release this information to me. Once that's done in our system, once the permission note is put on the record, it stays there until the person, the child, the card holder, takes the permission note off. So, you know, it's not that difficult a situation to work around. This committee just heard testimony earlier about children in need of aid. The point needs to be made that not all families are fully functional. Not all parents have their child's very best interest at heart. Children need protection sometimes from their families as well. I agree with Kay that this can put public librarians in a very untenable situation. Families are not always a together unit. There may be a parent that should not have all of that information. Another point that Art made was young adults need to know that they are free to seek information. They sometimes need to seek this information and will not do it if the library staff is just going to, their parent called up and they say, okay, this is everything that they've got. That could cause a child to be in a very, very difficult situation at home. The public library staff really would rather not get between the parent and the child. We'd like the parent and child to work this out themselves.
Thank you, Judith. Representative Gatto has a question.
Wouldn't you say that the library staff is exactly the person getting in between the parent and the child, rather than trying to avoid it?
Well, obviously I have a different opinion. I think that we are trying to avoid getting between the parent and the child. A parent always can ask their child, a child can always ask their parent. We'd like to not be making judgment calls about who or who is not authorized to get this information. We'd rather leave it to the parent and the child to work that out between them.
Follow up with Representative Gatto.
And so you don't think it's a judgment call when you make a statement that you don't want to make a judgment call? I mean, that's exactly what you're doing. And furthermore, which parent would you deny the right when you said that some parents shouldn't, you don't want to get between, you know, especially when parents are not getting along, which parent would have the right and which parent would lose the right?
Well, and we wouldn't have any access to that information. There's no way the public library could know what parent had custodial rights and which parent did not.
And would it make any difference which one had custodial rights? Wouldn't you say a child's parents would have that right, whether they have the custodial right or not? Why would one parent have it and not the other? Or unless you feel like it's appropriate for you to make that determination in spite of what the non-custodial parent might want.
Well, I know at school there are situations where a custodial parent, honestly, you know what, this is way out of my area of expertise, so I really just did not get into it further because I don't have the expertise to make that judgment.
Thank you, Judith. One more question. Representative Sisna has a question.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like to ask how many times at your library this is you're probably not keeping detailed notes on this, but at the same time, do you have a sense of how often this issue comes up that you need to explain to parents that they're going to need to get their child's permission?
I would say it probably comes up maybe once a month.
And about how many people do you have using your library?
We generate about 200,000 items a year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judith. We'll go to Fairbanks. June Stevens.
Thank you. My name is June Pinnell Stevens, and I'm the past president of the Alaska Civil Liberties Union and a current board member, and I'm testifying on their behalf today. I've also been a librarian, primarily in public libraries, for more than 30 years, and a past president of the Alaska Library Association and the Pacific Northwest Library Association. I do not support this change to the confidentiality of library records. Let me describe what actually happens when children check material out of a public library. Most libraries, parents sign a form agreeing that they are responsible for their children's use of the library before children under a certain age can obtain their own card. That age varies from library to library, but even without this specific form, and for minors old enough to obtain cards on their own signatures, parents would still be responsible for all their children's actions, whether or not they agree with them or even know about. Once the card has been issued, anyone who has it can use it. Parents use their children's cards to check out their own items every day, possibly because they've forgotten their cards, but often because their cards are blocked for handing over their material themselves. All of these records would be divulged, very possibly to a now divorced spouse who may or may not have custody of the child, but who would have a right under this change to view the record. The library, which does not have the means or authority to unravel complicated family relationships, could be placed in the middle of a bitter custody battle or divorce, particularly when the warring parents disagree about how to raise their children. Nearly all libraries send notices to alert all of their users that they have overdue items. These notices provide the information parents need to track down their children's material and return it. There may still be fines to pay, but these fines are usually capped at a very modest amount, and many libraries, including my own, don't charge fines at all. It seems to me that there are two possible reasons for this bill. The first reason is to help parents avoid minor inconveniences in handling their children's transactions with the library. Parents who are concerned about fines should work with local libraries to adjust the amount or eliminate them. Those who want to prevent overdue items can easily establish a family practice for handling books, perhaps by noting the number of items when they're checked out, or by putting them all on a special shelf for easy identification. Solution is one used in 23 other states, one which allows any user to authorize the release of his or her records, and I would support such an amendment. Another possibility I support is to exempt overdue items from the privilege of confidentiality, since the users with overdue items have essentially violated their contract with the library. I've heard FERPA, the Federal Educational Records Privacy Act, mentioned. FERPA does not apply to public. the bill, it seems to me, is to help parents control the content of what their children are reading. Confidentiality statute is the right to privacy guaranteed in the state constitution, a right that is not restricted by age. Without the guarantees of privacy and confidentiality, there can be no true freedom of inquiry. I encourage parents children's use of the library, but children, particularly older children, should be able to explore new ideas and viewpoints in the library without fear of punishment. Rather, parents can take advantage of what their children select from the library as an opportunity to reinforce their values through discussion and guidance. Unfortunately, there are many children trapped in grim family situations for whom the library provides the only source of information or of solace. Libraries cannot know why anyone checks out an item. Young users may be checking out books about abuse to write a report for school, but they may also be the victims of abuse who are looking for help. There are less restrictive means than this bill of addressing the concerns of convenience for parents. I urge you to support instead the constitutional right to privacy represented in the original law, so that all Alaskans can continue to enjoy the benefits of using a public library, the freedom to explore their world, their lives, and their imagination. Thank you.
June, I had, this was Representative Wilson, I have a question. And I hear and understand what you're saying about the right to privacy, and I'm trying to think of how that would work in my family, and I think that if my child, if I was doing something, number one, to one of my children, I don't think they would even think of bringing the book home. They might go to the library and read the book and get the information they need, but they sure wouldn't be bringing it home if they knew I was going to, you know, something was going to happen to them because of it or something. So I'm having a hard time making the connection of us taking away their rights to privacy when they indeed could spend the time in the library and read the book and not have to check it out even.
Perhaps they could spend time in the library. Different families have different situations as well. But the underlying principle, I think, remains the same. Not all minors do not possess the exact level of constitutional rights as adults. The courts have held that they do possess constitutional rights. And the older the child, the more likely the court would be to hold for the rights of the minor. And you're looking at this change to anyone under 18 years old. I think we need to recognize that there could be some very substantial challenges to the right, under the right of privacy, as well as under the right to receive information.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kapsner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who is the best person to answer this. What if, and this is a hypothetical, what if somebody is in state care, they were the victim of a child of need of aid case, and they were staying with foster parents? Who would sign off for them in that case?
I have no idea. The ability to get a library card may vary from library system to library system. So I'm not sure if the foster parents would function as guardians in that case, would be responsible if they sign off. I simply have no idea to answer that.
June, I have another question. If I've got the feeling here that I can hear what the librarians are fearful of, and I think they're fearful of being held liable because they gave the book to the wrong parent or allowed that information to go to the wrong parent. Do you think if this bill passed that somehow some librarian would be held liable?
Well, it's certainly possible that we could be involved in some sort of legal action. I mean, parents, as we all know, don't always agree on how to raise their children, and that's often, in fact, one of the causes for divorce. And if you just look at the Supreme Court case, U.S. Supreme Court case that was argued last week, I believe, under about the phrase, under God, in the Pledge of Allegiance, that was one parent who took this case to the Supreme Court because he did not necessarily agree with either the child or the mother. So there are, you can get into some very ticklish situations when when parents don't agree and when you hand out information or do anything that one parent might find offensive and the other might not.
Okay. Thank you, June. Next is Dillingham, Christopher O'Connor, or Christine O'Connor.
Madam Chair, can we back up once more if she's still online?
June, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Representative Seaton has a question.
Yeah, do you have any citations for legal opinions here in the state that would relate closely to the constitutional right of privacy and on and at what age or in what system at school versus public libraries that would apply?
You know, I really don't have a specific site either for Alaska or even for the Ninth Circuit. I'd be happy to get to check into it and get the information back to you if I find something.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Christine O'Connor.
Hey, hi, my name is Christine O'Connor. I'm the librarian at Dillingham Public Library. I've been involved as a volunteer at the library for 8 years, and I've been the librarian for nearly 10 years. I have a 13-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee today regarding parent access to child library records. I believe this bill needs to be amended to protect some of the teens who use my library. As has been mentioned, unfortunately, not all teens come from caring homes. Instead, their parents are indifferent or even harmful to these young adults. These are the teens I'm worried will be harmed by this bill as it is currently written. Teens that lose the privacy of their library use will be losing the security of knowing they can come to the library for safe access to vital information, information that can be life-changing for them. In my library, occasionally a teenage girl will bring me a stack of books, and as I check them out to her, I realize they're books about pregnancy. Most times I know the teen and also her parents, and each time I'm saddened to realize that this young girl is without support to deal with the situation she finds herself in. These girls virtually always come from sad homes where children are left to virtually raise themselves because of no neglect or even abuse. Dillingham is very small. Teens needing health information can be exposed publicly by visiting the hospital or public health center. While the records of these facilities are private, Dillingham is too small to allow a visit to go unnoticed. But the library allows teens to get the information they need privately. They can then make decisions with a little more information than they would probably otherwise have. I ask that you please remember these at-risk teens as you consider the Parent Access to Child Library Records Bill. Please maintain the sanctuary of public libraries for new teens. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Representative Gatto has a question.
Christine, do teens ever go in the library and read and simply read there and not check the book out?
They do, and especially health texts and a certain book I have called A Woman's Body, which is not explicit at all. It has pencil drawings, but I continually find it in the back corner, so that is one way. But as the earlier question asked, you know, that a kid probably wouldn't check out a book and take it home if they were at risk, I don't agree because a lot of the kids, they'll put the book in their backpack, they'll leave it at school in the school locker, and the reason I know that is at the end of the year, the school will, custodians or whoever will return some of my materials to me at the public library.
Thank you, Christine. Is there anyone else online that we've missed at all? Okay. I have here in the room, I have a Barbara Bird.
Barbara Berg. I'm the director of the Juneau Public Library here in Juneau, Alaska, and I have been a librarian for 20 years. I speak to you not just as a librarian, but I'm also a parent. I raised two children in Juneau, using the Juneau libraries, going to the Juneau schools. They're both adults now and don't live here any longer. I'm going to pass around a copy of our library policy on this first page.
Fine. Our policy for dealing with parents' requests to look at their children's library records. I'm sympathetic to parents' interest in being involved in their children's education and their children's reading, but I think the very best way to do that is to be involved with your children in discussing what they're reading, what they're learning in school, going to the library with them when they are young, and then when they are older, you trust in the judgments that they make because you have worked with them and you trust that they've got a good foundation in the values of life. In fact, my two boys now, they're 30 and 26, and they still call me up and they have major life events to discuss them with me. And I think in part that's because I established this open framework in working with them over the years. Librarians are concerned not just that we're going to be revealing the private reading matter of young individuals in our libraries, but personal information is covered by this too. The personal registration information, addresses, telephone numbers, email addresses. And again, we have to go back to the fact that librarians are not sure if the individual across the desk from them has any legitimate right to that information, if that's the parent, the legal guardian, or just some stranger off the street who is representing themselves as a parent of the child. Because these days, very seldom do children and parents have the same last name. There's no real way we can establish that that person has any right to it without asking for birth certificates, passports, and if you're going to be really legally correct about it. So that's one real concern. I would echo what others have said about young adults, especially, not just the younger kids so much, but the young adults needing sensitive information and being unwilling to engage in a transaction in a public library to take that material out unless they have an expectation of confidentiality. Most young people have difficulty even talking to an adult across the desk to ask those questions. And once they've taken that step and they've gotten that information, I think we need to respect their privacy to use it. I think I would like to go to our policy here and discuss that the way that we enable parents to see what their children have out if they desire that kind of direct control of what children are reading. They can be children can instruct the parent to ask for a printout, can be instructed by the parent to ask for a printout listing the books checked out. The parent can choose to retain possession of the card, and many parents do this just so the kids won't lose the cards they come in and check the books out that way. And the parent can do all the checkout for the child and the child's card themselves, which many do. We will tell people what is available, give people books if they know what the titles are. I think that the difficulties that some people have experienced in getting books is because they haven't established with the person they're picking it up for what the title was. If they have the other patron's library card in their possession, that's assumed to be permission to check the book out. If they have a signed note giving the name of the person that's authorized to pick it up, we'll give the materials to them. If they're in the library and you can call the person on the phone, child or adult, and say, so-and-so is here asking to pick up your library books. May he or she pick up your library books? And that person says yes, then we get them to them. And our library has always assumed that once the materials go lost or overdue and the printed notification goes home, that the right of privacy has been lost because the financial responsibility has been incurred that the parent has signed to take on, which is in the next page. It says parents have to sign the permission slip. And I would like to point out that this bill reaches beyond public libraries to academic and state libraries, and that in comparing Alaska to libraries around this country, the academic and state libraries,
probably only 48 allow inspection of library records by anyone other than the cardholder. In only 41 states, no, excuse me, 48 states disallow it, excuse me. It's disallowed, examination of records is disallowed in public libraries in 41 states. So we are not alone in having a statute for library privacy. And in schools, it may be up to 40 states, so it's probably more.
Barbara, would you just go back to that last sentence there? Tell me how many states and what they will and won't allow.
I'm sorry, I got confused here. Only 48 states disallow examination of records by anyone other than the cardholder in academic and state libraries. And 41 states disallow examination of records by anyone other than the cardholder in public libraries.
The 48 states say no one but the child can have the book.
The cardholder.
Whoever's got the possession of the card.
Of the card, yes.
So even if it's not your card, you can...
What a parent in our library system, and this was the interpretation of this confidentiality law that was given to us by our city attorney, that the contract is the card. So if we have, if the parent has the card in their possession for the child, we have assumed that the child's given the parent permission to see what's out on that card. This has never been tested anywhere. This was Mr. Corso's opinion. And we have also assumed on legal advice that when materials go overdue or our money is owed on the account, that then the parent may see what's on the record because they have signed accepting financial responsibility.
So I just want to get this clear. So so before anything started, the parent has to sign a paper saying that they'll take the responsibility.
Right.
So because of that, you feel that the parent can't be allowed to know what books are being checked out. But however, if a book is past due, then you'll tell them.
Because financial liability has been incurred at that point.
I guess I'm. Isn't that breaking the confidentiality of the child then?
Not according to the legal advice we were given. I think that there's some inconsistency in how this is applied across the state. I think that a previous person mentioned that there used to be notes attached to the record, and he was unhappy when he found that there was no law. Unfortunately, our present system does not allow us to attach notes any longer. It's a software problem.
Just one follow-up. So what do the 41 states do?
The 41 states do not allow examination of library records and by anyone other than the cardholder libraries.
And that's the present, and that's up-to-date material?
I believe this is up-to-date.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I'll follow up with that later then. Okay. Thank you, Representative Sisma.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to ask you the same question I asked before, and then if I can do another follow-up after that, I'd appreciate it. How many times do you know, and you may not know this, how many times, say a week or a month, do you think that this issue is an issue, that it even comes into play?
I couldn't say because I don't work with the circulation but sometimes the only times I hear about it is the director is when someone's been upset about it. And frankly, the incident that was mentioned in here today is the only incident in my tenure as director that I am aware of. And I was acting director since middle last year. Since the fall. So it certainly does not come up frequently in my estimation. We explain this to the parent when they come in to sign up. We explain how we operate, and I think maybe some better communication is needed with some of the libraries and better interpretation of policy for the work there, but I don't think it's
And then, Madam Chair, if I could do a little follow-up on that. Thank you. So the way that I see the way that you've printed this out, and so the way that it works is normally the parent comes in with the child, or does the child pick up the form and go take it home? Or?
The child comes in asking for a card. Normally a parent does come in with the child. But if we get a child who comes in and the parent is not with them at that point, we give them the guardian card and ask them to take it home and have the parent fill it out and sign it. And then they bring it back and we give them the library card. And we encourage parents to come with their children, especially when they're getting their first library card. We think it's an important life experience that they need to come together to do that.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Madam Chair. In B over here, we're reading the law, which says records of a public elementary or secondary school library identifying a minor child, which is under 18, shall be made available on request to a parent or guardian of that child. Under that, we have... Well, that's a big
Whoops.
One for me.
Yeah, that's, yeah. No, it shall be kept confidential. Under B on which...
Just A and B right at the top of the page. B says shall be made available on request to a parent or guardian of that child.
Yeah.
Is that supposed to say that or the opposite?
Well, that is, you know, that exactly. That is correct. Actually, that is correct because it's a public elementary or secondary school library.
School library.
Yeah. School. It's not a public library. It's a public elementary or secondary school library. It's not a public library.
So parents can request and get the information from their school library
yes.
at any time,
yes.
but not from a public library. Do you feel that's a distinction that is reasonable or somehow beneficial?
I do because. The public library is expressed earlier, something that people use independently. It's an independent learning situation. And especially when children reach their teen and upper teen years, I think that they are acting, they're using the library as adults, essentially, independently to foster their own independent learning. And I think it is a reasonable distinction, yes.
We see a lot of television ads that, especially on drugs, that say, how do you know your kid's not using drugs? And the father answers, and the mother says, because I ask them every day. Now, that is an ad that's asking for parental involvement in the activities of their children. Does that square up with a situation where you're saying, I don't want parental involvement in the activities of their children.
That's absolutely not what I was saying. I do want parental involvement in activities of children, but I don't think that the way you get it is by putting the librarian in between the child and yourself. I think you talk to your child, you go to the library with them, you are constantly engaged with them, talking about what they're reading, and then you don't get to the situation where the child is secretive and hiding materials from you in your home. If you are a caring parent and involved in your child's upbringing, that certainly is my experience of how it works. My own children.
Thank you, Barbara. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? Okay, then I will close public testimony. And Senator Green, would you like to come forward and kind of give us a summary of after all this?
I would like to adjust your attention to the listing of states' involvement. And you have it says, five states specifically say parental access is allowed to school libraries.
Senator Green, how new is this information? Do you know?
Through the chair again, my name is Jacqueline. I got this when we initially did the legislation this session from the MCSL, so I would say about 3 months old.
Thank you.
Eight states specifically say public library
and then 14 states provide for student library to be private, and then 23 states have no laws specifically addressing children but provide for public library records to be confidential. However, we went a step further, and in checking out those states that are silent when they don't address children, when they've been taken through the process, through the court process, in each case they prevailed in the case of the parent deeming that they do have right to access of their children's library records in public libraries.
So 13 states allow, according to this, this is the National Conference of State Legislators.
Yeah.
13 states allow parental access, and 14 states
provide for records to be private.
Provide for students' library records to be private. So, and 23 states have no laws specifically addressing children, but provide for public library records to be confidential.
To the chair, again, Jacqueline DePoe, just to clarify a little bit more. Like Senator Boone was saying, in the 23 states that they don't have a specific law either way, although library records are confidential, there's four instances of case law that said when it came down to it that the parents had the rights and the children didn't have the right to privacy for the records. So it could, if you wanted to conjecture and sort of extrapolate that, we could say in those 23 states that the children, their records weren't private.
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, just looking at, you know, I think there's something seems a little strange here, because the 13 states that allow parental access, it say, and five of those specifically say school, so that if it specifically says school, it means it wouldn't apply to public records. But I would think that all of the states under the federal law would have to allow that for all schools. So, you know, we have the federal law that says that all school educational records have to be available to the parents. So I think those first five states are really basically just mirroring the federal law. And so we really have eight states are all that specifically say public library access.
And through the chair, just to clarify a little bit more, we've talked a little bit about FERPA today, the federal law that this is compliant to. FERPA was passed in 1974, and no one really noticed it for a long time. And suddenly in 2002, there was a Supreme Court decision that said, yes, we really need to be diligent about this. And as a result of that, as a result of Justice Rehnquist's decision, they opened a whole office that's called the Family Compliance Office. And it's specifically only is there for to make sure parents are getting access to their children's records. And if you are not in compliance, you will lose all federal education funding for your state. And they are going through state by state and taking away funding from states that are not in compliance. So we are a little bit on the cusp and a little forward thinking in this legislation. But I would anticipate that as states are finding out more and more about FERPA, they will become more and more compliant, and these issues will be raised in other states also.
As pertains to public school
public
libraries.
School
public
libraries.
Educational it's records, yeah.
Representative Sisna?
I don't want to get in the way of a follow-up.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative?
Well, I was just trying to square these numbers with what we had heard before. So they are pretty consistent. We have eight, I think, we have eight states here that specifically allow public library records. And I think the information we were given that 41 did not have that allowance. So those are pretty close numbers where we have eight that do or 41 that do not. And although the case law isn't a legislative law, so I think those things aren't too inconsistent. Yeah.
But it could apply to all 23 states right. that are yeah. silent as the president.
Right.
Okay.
Representative Sisna, sorry.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Senator Green, I guess I'm trying to, in my mind, square this with the fact that Alaska law is really, really dogged on privacy. We have some of the we have constitutionally some of the strongest privacy, or maybe the most, the strongest in the nation. And that, I guess as a parent, I felt that that at 18, my daughter wasn't going to have that knowledge in her head. She wasn't going to know that. And that I really needed to teach that early, that I needed to teach her right to her privacy and her dignity, and those things had to be taught early on. I guess I'm really struck by the teaching that this right of the young library card possessor, because actually my daughter wouldn't have gotten a library card by herself, because I would have gone into the library with her and I would have kept it. So it would only be probably, I would think, either a far more liberal parent than myself or a child who got dropped off at the library and the parents didn't come in that would keep that library card. Probably not the people who'd be checking on what books were out until they had to pay a fine. That sort of seems true to me. And I do think that the idea of a parent needing to ask their children permission is really lovely. I love that, because it's giving a child some power, and I want to have power, but you never too much when you're being a parent. Never too much. You want to give just, you want the child to have some power. Then the question I'd like to ask, that's kind of my feeling, but the question I'd like to ask is 17 something, is that age something that is a real firm, hard age for you, or did you ever consider maybe a little younger ages when kids were getting to the point where they need to start practicing even more their use of going places and taking responsibility and that kind of thing?
Yeah. Thank you. Representative Sisna, when we were comparing the requirements of FERPA and for consistency purposes, we set it at the same level at the FERPA statute and or requirement, and just it's the under 18 years of age. And I think you still have the issue of responsibility for the overdue loss of the book or whatever still rests with the parent at that age. And so that was our requirement. Our thinking, but basically for simplicity's sake, I would also add, concerning your original statements, that children don't have the right to contract, nor do they have the right to give their parents permission to do this. Children are children, minors are children, and that's sort of the distinction we're trying to make. And constitutionally, rights to, civil rights and rights to privacy, I think, are very, very, very subject to interpretation as pertains to children, and particularly in those roles where parents still have oversight and responsibility. And so this was not meant to become a civil rights issue, nor to violate the rights of anyone. This is to bring some degree of reason to the sort of what we go through with our children when we have them in our home and we raise them and we have them back and forth and things get awry. And I can only say the frustration expressed from people who contacted us and the inflexibility of certain libraries to not participate nor to help
I think that probably the Juno model works very well in Juno. And they've probably gone quite a ways toward it. But you still have the right of the parent